Hi, this is Akash.
And this is Amrit.
And you're listening to What's the Problem? Amrit, thanks for setting this up. What drew you to have Sam on this podcast?
If I'm being very honest, it's probably the name Office and Dragons is and that catches most people's attention. But honestly, I think Sam is a perfect case of someone who really lived the problem, and instead of accepting fate, he's sort of done something about it. And that's what I love about most tech entrepreneurs, is they just don't accept the status quo. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think law tech or legal tech, it's just been super underexplored. You still see tech companies that focus on law at first struggle to really treat it as a full total addressable market. And so you have to expand to other horizons or use the tech that's being built in other domains. And law has just been slow to take this on and take on ways of improving their situation. So I'm really excited by anyone who is trying to tackle that. Yeah, is there anything else you'd add to that, Albert?
No, I guess without further ado, let's crack on.
Hey, Sam, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So Office and Dragons eliminates repetitive document work without templates, setup or code. So Sam, the first question we always got to ask our guests is, what's the problem your company started trying to solve?
The problem was a problem that I had back when I was a private equity M&A lawyer working at Kirkland & Ellis in London and New York. In my time there, I got really fed up, upset, other adjectives with a lot of this repetitive document, editing, updating, spin out work that always just got in the way of us getting our deals done. You know, it's the kind of stuff that no one's ever a hero for doing, and yet it must be done in order to close. You got your clients chasing, the partners chasing you. People really burn out and quit over this stuff, and it really doesn't amount to anything, because end of the day, when I was helping the partners with the bills for this work, all that stuff was getting written off anyway, or huge chunks of it were. And you know, I looked around for something that should solve this problem, like a computer should be able to do it, but I didn't find anything that could solve the problem and nothing that could really do it in the way that we worked. There's a good deal of tech out there for automating documents, but the kind of paradigm for this technology has been like to do it in a way that's easy to develop rather than in a way that's easy to use, given the fact that deals aren't actually all cookie cutter, given that they're dynamic and evolving. You need something flexible, something agile. Whereas the other solutions weren't. Now, long story short, that's what led to me founding Office and Dragons.
That problem that you faced as an M&A lawyer, was that really specific to just M&A, or is it also applicable to different practices of law?
Yeah, it's really across the board in different practices of law. And our customers today are using Office and Dragons across a wide variety of practice areas, from shipping finance to employment matters to venture financings to fund formation and lots of stuff in between, even on litigations. The fact of the matter is that commercial transactions across the board have been evolving. They're always getting faster. They're always getting more complex. And what that's caused is this like ballooning really over time in the amount of documentation required to document these transactions in the first place or to affect any action related thereto. Meanwhile, the way lawyers have operated has really stayed the same. We're not like writing with pencils or pens, we're typing on a keyboard, but really it's the same thing. When the complexity of the deals is growing exponentially, and yet we're just trying to do the same thing, I mean, it doesn't work.
What I found really interesting from our kind of discussions earlier was actually there was another pain point that we're solving, is that law firms are really struggling to keep employees because of burnout.
But a number of studies have been done recently, and they show that something like over 3/4 of lawyers say they leave their job due to poor work-life balance and burnout. So it's a really big problem. And then when you look at, you know, questions about things that can solve this, use of technology, it's a very low rating you get of lawyer satisfaction or feeling that the technology that their workplace is implementing is sufficient to solve the problem. And among those things where they think technology can have a big impact, pretty much across the board, it's with automating away these administrative, repetitive, manual tasks. That's where people feel a big difference can be made by tech, a difference that can alleviate the burnout that they feel in their jobs.
Do you think that's probably the reason why we've seen this rise in productivity apps in kind of recent years with Monday.com, Asana? And do you feel like the reason why no one's using Microsoft Word is because that verticalization, as you sort of mentioned, is things just didn't quite fit for lawyers and how they operate?
Big differences, I think, between law firms and other businesses is that an increase in productivity directly and understandably affects the bottom line of most businesses, with the law firm, which bills by the hour historically, now that's changing, and which is a partnership model, which has different incentives on what to do with earnings, whether to take them out or reinvest. It's not so linear a relationship. The other thing about law firms versus other types of businesses is, while the legal sector is a tremendous contributor to GDP, the number of firms and the number of people actually practicing the law is really small. As compared to like your Monday.com, whose MO is get as many people as possible using it, charge them all like a little bit of money, and that adds up to like a ton. Legal is very different. You have a very small number of players, but responsible per capita for creating a ton of economic value, despite like a small number of people. Like, so I think they were overlooked even by, you know, the technology they use the most, things like Microsoft. You don't really see Microsoft investing anything in solutions for lawyers. It's really been this kind of wave of mostly ex-lawyer founders like myself, who tech has become more ubiquitous. Everyone knows about it. Everyone's got a friend from university who did some programming or something like this. They've been kind of the vanguard in developing solutions. And this has been going on, by the way, lawyers developing legal solutions. And since like the 90s, you know, companies started that way that are still around today and are really huge. But really quite recently, you've seen an explosion in the number of people doing this.
What has been the factor for that pressure point in causing this boom in innovation?
Within the legal field, something that's been going on for a while has been the compartmentalization of lower value legal services. For example, due diligence for litigation cases. For a long time, law firms have been operating internal units that have a specialized type of person doing just that. They're paid lower, they're charged out lower than the attorneys leading the case. And it's really kind of this procedure-oriented unit. So that's been around for a while, and there have been businesses that do just this. That led eventually to e-discovery to develop a lot of applications that help with this. And that segment of the market is quite mature. We've got a number of IPO'd, very large or long-time public e-discovery companies out there. So that's kind of been one track. Within even like transactional work, you know, leaving litigation aside, there's these kinds of things like where you're just generating a lot of paper or following a lot of process that law firms and others have like expanded their, let's say, these low-cost units into doing some of this kind of work as well. They're typically called alternative legal services providers, whether they're a business unit of a law firm or a separate company on their own, kind of same idea. It's more procedurally oriented, you know, lower cost, it's structured differently. And from there, you know, you've got a lot of incentive in that kind of unit to bring on tech or develop tech solutions to make that more efficient, because there's a more direct link between the bottom line and efficiencies for that kind of unit. Other forces, I would say, would be on the consumer-oriented end or like on the small business end. For a good long time, you've had companies like LegalZoom or Rocket Lawyer or electronic wills or like self-service, like divorce filings and things like this that taken the really like commodity end of the spectrum where things really pretty much do need to be the same. Like if you're a small business with 10 people, you don't need a very custom consulting agreement. You just need some kind of consulting agreement that lets you feel comfortable you can hire a consultant, or some kind of NDA, and things like LegalZoom were, you know, really great for that. And then just the proliferation of these forces are affecting these things, and that's kind of maybe affecting interest and the ideation within these businesses that this could happen. Then among the founders, I think also just like being inundated in other aspects of life with more technology, being more aware of apps, being more aware of Silicon Valley and startup.
On that sort of piece about innovation and legal tech, do you think at the current rate it's sufficient, or would you want to put steroids on the kind of innovation curve or adoption in legal tech? And if so, what sort of incentives or initiatives could be done to speed up innovation?
So it's a very thoroughly discussed subject with a lot of open questions still. The fact of the matter is, relative to the development of legal tech, adoption is quite low. It's unfortunately like shelfware is par for the course rather than an exception to the rule. The exception to the rule, to be honest, is something that's adopted well and quickly and actually picked up. Obviously, there's interest, there's appetite, there's a lot of solutions, there's a lot of good salespeople out there. you know, pitching these kind of visions for their product or transformation and things like this. But when that kind of tries to hit the pavement, it turns out that either technology, the purchase, the use case just wasn't well scoped, or there are cultural barriers to picking it up, or there's not enough internal support because no one sees an immediate benefit from picking this up and using it, or there's not enough internal change management resource. There's a lot, and adoption is really tough for, I think, a lot of folks. Certainly we work with our customers very closely on adoption. We check in with them on a regular basis. We share best practices that we've learned across every customer we work with. We put our best foot forward. And for us, on wood, so far adoption has been really successful. Like Office and Dragons, I think, is unique in the fact that people can see the value right away. People can pick it up and use it right away, and they get value right away. And that, I think, has to do with like our ethos, which goes back to kind of the original conception of the tool. This is something that I wanted to be able to like help me in a pinch, right? When I was like stuck under like a mountain of unexpected work, I wanted something I could pick up right away and it gets rid of that for me. And I wanted something, when I set out to like start making it, I wanted something that like my most tech averse colleague would also feel comfortable picking up and using. And that's transformed into our kind of ethos of emphasizing like that time to initial value, like really minimizing how long it takes someone from picking it up to getting done with a piece of work that they've got, building as much into onboarding as possible in terms of in-app product tours, simplified interface, and all of this, and really focusing on like this 80-20 rule. Like, we want to get you 80% done as fast as possible, rather than spend however long it takes to get to 100. And I think that's worked for us, combined with that customer success element that goes beyond the application itself. Legal services are delivered is very far from like efficient. If you just think about all the technology that's available today and the most efficient way to deliver the services, my sense is it's far from being as efficient as it could be. But then, yeah, things like business models, partnership structures, all this complicate things. And I do wonder whether the partnership form has to go, whether these rules about mandated attorney ownership over legal practices has to go before things get truly efficient, let's say on the law firm side. On the in-house side, there's a lot of motivation to be efficient. But my sense, and we don't work as much with in-house legal teams, but my sense is that they're kind of along with HR. Like, no one wants to talk to legal, because if you talk to legal, it means you've got a problem. You don't talk to legal. People want to invest in sales. People want to invest in like product. And marketing is a different story, but they understand that giving money to marketing will increase sales. Like, legal is seen as a cost center. HR and others are seen as like a cost center. It can vary in some companies, Google, where they're doing like a million patent litigations per day, and that's like a key part of their strategy, then I think their legal department gets a lot more investment.
It was more of the kind of business founder, the product. I think the first question I have to ask has to be the elephant in the room. How did you come up with the name of Office and Dragons?
If it's not obvious, it's a pun on Dungeons and Dragons. And back when I was an M&A lawyer, the office was my dungeon and I needed a dragon to save me, hence Office and Dragons.
I am now getting absolute weird perceptions of what it's like being in the magic circle law firms and new dynamic tables, what magic circle means. And then how does the kind of product specifically improve productivity and how does it eliminate repetitive work?
A number of different features. The most used feature is oftentimes in a legal transaction, you will need to generate a large volume of similar documents for different entities. For example, let's say you have a lot of investors in a venture capital fund or a private equity fund. Each of them is going to need an LP agreement, a subscription document, and this whole pack of kind of other documents. Now, for a fund of like a meaningful size, these are all going to need to be drafted and negotiated bespoke for the fund. They're not like cookie cutter off the shelf documents. And yet, once you've got those documents agreed, negotiated, you need to be able to generate them for all 50, 100, 300 LPs. So what Office and Dragons would let you do in that case, or in any other similar case, is to take your docs as they are, upload them into the platform, input the different particular details for each of those investors, and automatically spin out all of those different documents for you, along with legal black line against the base document. So you can really quickly get this done, and you can understand that it's being done correctly by working from like this master table of data, as opposed to going into each document one at a time, copy, paste, find, replace, and so on. And what we found is that our app, depending on the size of the matter, can save 85 to 99% of the time that you spend doing this kind of copy paste stuff, which you might think copy paste is, you know, 10 seconds. But actually, what we found, we measured this with our customers, is you have to take the document, you have to copy it, you have to go in, you have to make the changes, you have to save it, you have to rename it, you have to run the black line, you have to save that as well. That adds up to like on average 10 minutes per document. And if you tried to do it mail merge or some other way, you know, those ways don't work very well either. They're very rigid. There's a limit on what you can do. And then you spend a bunch of time renaming and organizing a big mess of output at the end. So that's an example. And that's like this really basic use case. This is that, oh crap, I got to do this before Monday. Instead of spending my whole weekend on it, I do it in the course of like Friday evening and then I'm off. From there, like we got a lot of features you can build up on this more. You can link and reuse kind of single sources of truth for client data or deal specific data across different workflows. So keep one data source and have it populate lots of different documents. You can build in different logic flows, formulas, questionnaires, and other things that can take this workflow and either sort of templatize it to be reused in the future or deliver additional ways to other stakeholders or your clients to input information or review the information going into the matter and so on, make, you know, additional updates past the first draft. There's a lot of different functionality built in, but the core initial use cases are all around like, oh crap, I've got a lot of this document work that I need to get done. And even if it's one thing, like you have to change the date on the documents, that's 300 files you need to open, change, save, run black line, save, organize, send. That can easily be somebody's weekend. Whereas with Office and Dragons, it can be something you do before you leave the office on Friday.
I'm up for 10 documents. I may forget to save one, or I think I've done that one, but I haven't done that one. And then I'm like, oh, I didn't save it. It's kind of an absolute mess. Is there an also kind of quantifiable reduction, kind of human error? And
it's hard to like quantify it per se. People, you know, don't necessarily know what their error rates are unassisted. And if they did, they probably wouldn't want to admit to whatever it was. But yeah, you know, mathematically speaking, think about it. If you have like a 5% chance of making a mistake in any one document and you do 20 documents, well, guaranteed to make a mistake in one of them. So with Office and Dragons or any kind of automated process, as long as your setup is right, you're guaranteed to get a correct output. And the benefit of doing your setup in like one instruction sheet as opposed to across 100 different documents is it's really easy to review. It's in one place, it's organized, it's easy to spot a mistake. And even if it's not like totally quantifiable, our users, especially more senior lawyers, like senior associates, partners who are on the line, you know, buck stops with them for this being correct. They feel a big confidence boost in the fact that they reviewed it in this one place. They're no longer just relying on spot checking 10 red lines and hoping the other 90 are correct.
On the point of partners and kind of senior associates, how do you kind of quantify the benefits to senior stakeholders?
I think we've talked to different pains at different times, and it can really vary by who it is we're speaking to. But fundamentally, it comes down to a frustration with the status quo. Doing this work, however you want to like rationalize it with justificatory language, like, it feels really frustrating to be there on a matter, have your client say, okay, can you get this done by tonight? And have to go, well, I don't know, maybe we can't because you don't realize that we've got to do these 30 different documents and I've got to ruin someone's night and I've got to stay up till 2 to look at that. It just kind of feels dumb, to be honest. Like when I was doing it, it felt really dumb to be sitting there and doing it that way. And I think, you know, more senior partners are realizing, like, yeah, this just isn't the way we want to operate. And then the language it can take is saving time, making people's lives easier or delivering faster for our clients, reducing the cost base to increase profit.
I've gone to a couple of kind of final questions. If you could ask a random VC or another investor one question, what would it be?
How they value companies, especially like early stage companies. You know, obviously there's different models out there, but I'd love to understand, you know, when, how is it done? Like what model are they running? How do they decide? How much time do they spend on it? How much then weight do they even give to their own model? I feel like to me, that's always been like a mystery. Everyone talks about to hit XYZ and that's going to determine our like investment hypothesis and there's a valuation and all that. But like to really understand what the process is, what different people do and what's like the most common one would be really interesting to me.
What's been the kind of biggest learning lesson you've had since undertaking Office and Dragons?
Too many lessons, I feel like, because the lesson always changes. You learn one lesson and then the next one comes afterwards. It's going to sound really vague and broad, but I think I just kind of learned what a business is and what it's to be a business founder. And that's, I haven't even learned it enough yet. Actually, I knew pretty much nothing about startups and VC and Silicon Valley and all this. I didn't know that like hyper growth startups versus small businesses versus B2C or B2D or B2B or like, so really my horizon has really broadened. You know, first you learn about the kind of Silicon Valley stuff because that's ubiquitous out there. As soon as you start doing a tech thing, like you pointed to a million resources. My horizon's really broadened and my understanding's matured of different kinds of businesses, different market sizes and dynamics and what kind of business you can build in each space. My own role is like a founder, CEO, business leader, whatever you want to call it. My understanding of like what that role requires over time has developed as I spent more time in the role. And I'm sure a year from now, I'll have a totally new layer of understanding on top of that as my role will have changed.
I will definitely ask in a year's time how that is. But well, Sam, how can people find out about the magic that is Office and Dragons?
It's an easy name to remember. So website easy enough to officeanddragons.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, Samuel Smolkin. Connect with me there. Office and Dragons on LinkedIn too. Those are the best places to follow me and the company on social media.
Brilliant. Well, Sam, thanks so much for your time today. Really, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on.
No worries. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Akash, what do you think about the episode?
From beginning to end, I really love what we said early on about methods that were being used were easy to create for a firm, but they weren't really easy to use. So, I mean, it just points to, again, the law being very slow to adopting technology. And you see a combo in 2022 and now 2023 of this increased labor power as well as increased employee burnout. And I think we're just seeing all these different cases of people leaving or people resigning. And I'm just curious if we can quantify an actual cost that these law firms are now taking on by just not innovating their practices or not improving the situation for their employees. But what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a perfect example, as you were saying, that law firms have become really compartmentalized and really specialized in certain areas, and people are now just doing the same job day in and day out. And something that you don't really realize about the importance of becoming high-proficient or hyper-specialized within that space. But what that allows to happen is you can really quantify the problem of that specific situation and the inefficiency for that particular point solution. And so that's when I think legal tech and law tech becomes really exciting, because they can target that specific part of the process and then being able to quantify, we can save you X or Y. Second to that is, I think it's a great example of Sam having really lived the problem. Many nights, just changing the dates on many documents and spending his whole weekend doing that. And because he's really lived the problem, he's able to create a solution that really resonates with the target customer. And so one of those founders for why we set up What's the Problem? And so that being said, if you know a founder who has really lived the problem and understands their space, please drop us a DM and be sure to like and subscribe.